Hello. You are listening to the Carol Connection. With your host, Jared Carol.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Carol Connection. I am your host, Jared Carol, here to bring you guys another great episode. I wanted to shout out last week's episode, episode 25 with Juliana Fonseca. That was a really fun episode and we shared a lot of things in common too about going to work after college and going to work in these toxic work environments and dealing with a lot of mental health stuff. And we talked through that and it was a really fun episode and it was great to catch up with her. So if you haven't heard that, please check it out, thecarolconnection.simplecast.com or Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all those major listening platforms. So today, I'm with another great guest by the name of Brent Ribello. How are you doing, Brent?
I'm doing all right.
Glad you can make it. So let's just start off and just dive right into this. So just kind of tell my audience who you are and kind of what you've been up to.
So I, right out of high school, I started working for my father's company. I'm a combat medic now, was a firefighter. Building my house currently, live with my mom. I have in the house my little brother, Biniam. He was, we adopted him years ago, my mother did, and he was 3 years old when we adopted him from Ethiopia, and now we just recently, last year, adopted my little sister, Holly. She's amazing. I can't imagine living without her now. It's only been a year, too. And then I have my sister, Sarah, who lives as well with me, and my sister, Caitlin, just moved out to Alaska, which is crazy. But
oh, that's crazy. Did she do that for... Was she with someone and they moved out there, or is it just like a career choice?
Yeah, so she got married to my brother-in-law now, and he's active duty in the Army, so he got stationed out there.
Sweet. We love the military around here. So, obviously talking about your siblings and stuff, let's dive into family first. So, talk to me a little bit about that and like how that experience was for you growing up, too.
Yeah, I mean, I was young when Biniam was joined into the family, and... He's my only brother, you know, so that was a big deal for me because I only lived with sisters. So for me to get a brother, I was always excited. So I think we're close. Unfortunately, I don't have time to spend the time with him like I want to, you know, but with my sister, Holly, I went to China with my mom and that was a great experience. Just check out the different culture and everything else. And to meet her, it was tough for her because she's older. We adopted Biniam when he was three. We adopted her when she was 12. Okay. So it was a big change for her and emotionally and everything else. Like she went through a lot with the change, especially like you're going into a family where they don't even speak the same language as you, you know? So it was tough for her. Like she treated my like us and my mom a little bit with like some anger almost, you know, because we don't know what she went through in China, you know? Yeah. So she obviously has some things that she needs to work on, but she's been awesome recently, you know. She's like a part of the family. Like
that's a huge life change too when you really think about it too, like at 12 years old to like completely leave the country that you were born and raised in to come here and live with an entire different family. Like that is a lot to deal with, and like I can only imagine some of the things that she's gone through. And did she speak English at the time? Is that something that you guys had to like work through with her?
Yeah, no, she didn't speak any English. That's the crazy part, is that we had to use Google Translate the whole time we were in China to talk to her.
Wow.
And her mom left her out on the street.
Damn.
I think it was a park bench when she was an infant because she was born. The doctors in the U.S. believe that she had a stroke when she was a baby. So half of her body's partially paralyzed. You know, she walks with a limp and she can't really use her right hand. So her mother left her on a park bench. And ever since then, she just lived in an orphanage. So we had to use Google Translate the whole time, which is crazy. It's tough, you know, definitely tough. And it's not an easy language to learn at all.
No,
you know?
Not.
I know like two words, and I spent 2 weeks in China. I only like remember two words. It's a tough language to learn.
That's insane. That's a huge barrier. Like, what was the process like? Obviously, you were with your mom when you went to go over there and adopt. Like, what was the process like? I don't even know how that goes. Do you pick the child that you want to adopt? Do you sit down with these different children and like go through like a interview process? Like
no, so you don't, but you go through an agency. I don't know the process as well as my mother does.
Yeah,
but you know, you go through an agency And through that agency, they have a list of children available for adoption. And you tell the agency, like, the age, the gender of what you're looking to adopt for. And my mom wanted to adopt an older child because most people don't want to adopt older children because it's harder. It's a lot harder. You know, like Binium, when he came here, he learned English very quick because he was so young. You know, he doesn't even remember anything. If you ask him, he doesn't remember anything from Ethiopia, you know, so it was like as if he was raised here. With Holly, she's a lot older, so it's a lot harder. It's a lot harder for her to adjust. You know, she has to learn a new language, and her brain isn't at, like a sponge like you are when you're that young, you know. So, yeah, that was definitely a huge learning curve for everybody, you know. So you basically, with the agency, you pick out a child, you know, and so my mom fell in love with her just by seeing her picture.
Yeah.
So my mom, you never get to talk to her or meet her or anything. So my mom sent her like packages and pictures of the family of us. And then she started, I don't really know any of the other parts of the process other than, you know, there's a lot of things that go into it. And then we went to China. Fast forward, because I don't know that any of the other stuff, but we went to China and we met her. We had to spend a week, so every country's different, but in China, they want you to spend a week just traveling in different areas of China to understand the Chinese culture. They don't want you to adopt their children without understanding their culture first.
Yeah, culture's huge.
So we didn't meet her until a week. So we spent a week, we went to the Great Wall of China, the Forbidden City, you know, just got to tour around China, understand their culture. Then after the first week, we got to meet her for the first time. You know, she was very shy and it was tough. It was kind of tough. Obviously, she was going through things. She's actually been in the U.S. before. You know, she I don't know exactly what type of program it was. She wasn't adopted, but she went to like a quick like 1 month thing with another mother, single mother in Texas. And then she got sent back. So I think she has like maybe some trust issues because, you know, she might have thought that she was being adopted and then she got sent back. It was a different program. Like she wasn't really being adopted, you know. So it was really hard for her.
I can imagine, dude. Like just even that whole process too. Just trying to communicate too. Like, I mean, think of yourself too when you were so young. Like, I mean, I know myself. I was very shy. And to even imagine someone who's gone through the things that she's gone through, and you probably still don't even know the whole picture too, and that's probably going to take years. That's a lot of unchecked traumas. I mean, I'm big on mental health, so like there's probably a lot of things mental health-wise there where she's going to have to go through those battles, and like that's so much credit to your mom and you for both going through that process and going out there and doing that. Like, not a lot of families adopt, and that's a big thing, especially older children, like you said. That's a huge thing.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely give my mom a lot of props for doing that. And Holly has been doing great. She's definitely been working on things, and she's come a long way. Like, she used to be a shy girl who kind of pushed us away because I feel like she was afraid to get connected because she was afraid that she might lose us, like she has everybody else in her life, you know. So I think at first she was afraid to get connected with other people, and now it's like she's a part of the family. She's not shy at all, you know. She's so loud. She's the loudest one in the house, and we're always joking around and stuff. I couldn't imagine living without her now. It's only been a year.
Dude, that's so amazing to hear, because like I've obviously known this stuff too, but like actually sit down and talk about it too. And I hope the audience gets like some good background about that whole process too in general. I think not a lot of people get that experience to be raised with children from different cultures. Like, that really does change your perspective. Talk a little bit about the trip in China. Like, how was that? Like,
that was an awesome trip, you know. China was great. It's a beautiful country. The people in China were awesome. You know, the tour guides we had, awesome people. The food was amazing. You know, the Chinese food over there is nothing like Chinese food over here. Like, not even the same thing at all. You know, their food's actually really, really good and healthy. And they also had some weird things on the menu that we didn't really want to try. But you know, it was beautiful. It was a great trip. Cool to see a whole totally different culture, you know.
Yeah, that's the big thing too that I try to preach. I preached early in the podcast too. Like, I went to Spain in, was it 2019? 2019, and I visited my brother out there, and just to see a different culture, I think that's huge for anybody, especially people who have never left the US. I think you need to. Like, you need to see how other countries operate and how their culture is to get a full picture. Like, we have it fucking good here. Like, a lot of people in a lot of these countries do live in extreme poverty. Like, people really don't understand how great things are until you actually go out to these countries. And, like, a lot of these countries, too, are beautiful. Like, not like the U.S. isn't, but, like, there's so much out there that needs to be seen. And obviously it's tough right now with everything that's going on. And we'll talk about that a little later on. But talk a little bit about the family business and how you got into that before going into the military. We'll kind of progress into that. But, like, the family business, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so my father owns a construction company, and we build and remodel Dunkin' Donuts. And for the most part, that's pretty much all we do. Mm-hmm. We do a little bit of residential. That's more so working on our clients' houses, personal houses, and stuff like that. But we pretty much only do Dunkin's. We're busy all year round. And it's a great business because they keep us busy, you know? Mm.
For construction-wise, what were you drawn to it because it was family business? Did you actually like it? Do you actually enjoy doing it? Like, what was the reason for sticking with that?
So I knew I wasn't going to go to college right in high school, mm-hmm. you know? That's why I really didn't pay attention like I should have, you know? So
in high school,
yeah. So I knew I was going to work for my father's company. My plan was, you know, I would follow in his footsteps, and he established and he built a company from nothing, mm-hmm. you know, to a very successful company. So I want to continue that. So ever since I was young, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I want to work for my father, follow his footsteps, learn from him, and then maybe one day take the company and grow it even double, triple the size in what it is, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a great mindset. I think a lot of people too struggle coming out of like high school. I mean, not many people really know what they want to do. So knowing that you had that family business in your back pocket too, I think that made that transition probably easier for yourself. Because for me, I had no fucking clue. I mean, sometimes to this day, I really don't have a fucking clue what's going on. But like, I think I have a better idea more lately, especially after the things that I've gone through in my own life. And I talked about the podcast, I talked about last week, especially with Juliana, about traveling and like seeing these different states and living in different states and working and trying new things and coming into this podcast and trying something new and hearing you share your stories and hearing people that have come on and share their stories. I think that's so valuable. But the college experience in general, I think it's a little overrated now that I've gone through it. I mean, I didn't get the full like sorority frat house college experience. Like, I didn't get that, but like, I seen it enough and experienced it a little bit where I was like, ugh. Wasn't for me.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like I should have went through that, you know? Yeah, have that time period where you got to party and have that fun, you know? I went straight into work, working full-time, working 60 hours a week right at 17 years old, you know? So I'm 24. I say this all the time. I'm 24, and I feel like I'm going on 40 because I feel like I've been doing this for so long.
But, like, that's mad respect, though, because the skills that you're learning, too, you can apply to your own life. Like, obviously, you're working on your own house. Like, talk to me a little bit about that, too. Like, how's that experience been for you?
Yeah, it's been stressful, for sure. You know, I bought the house when I was 20. Well, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, I bought the house when I was 20. And I started gutting it. And at first, I was like, hey, you know, I'm only going to throw a little bit of cash into this. Because the house was definitely a fixer-upper. So I was like, mm-hmm. all right, I'm going to make this house look pretty. Once I started gutting the house, then I started seeing that it had some serious structural issues. So I'm like, okay, I got to fix this and I got to fix that. And then before you know it, I literally knocked down the whole house except for the first floor and the foundation. And I built all new exterior walls, framed the new roof. Like, now I literally built a brand new house. And it's funny because I definitely learned. I should have listened to my father. He has way more experience than I do, because he said straight from the beginning, he's like, you know, knock this whole house down and just build it new. And I was like, no, you know, I don't want to spend the money on that, this and that. And come to find out, I ended up doing it anyway. And that's why it's taken me years to do this, because I've been doing it myself for the most part. I've had a lot of help. I've had a lot of help from family, friends, my father, you know. But even so, I more so just work on the weekends, you know, so it's taken me years to work on this house. Finally, we're on the home stretch, maybe just another month and we'll be in the house.
That's amazing, too. And just for the record, like, the house is beautiful. I've seen parts of it, and fantastic job to yourself and everyone that's helped you on that. Like, major props. A lot of people can't do that. Most people can't do that. Fuck, I can't do that. Like, so to have those skills to do that, that's going to help you in life forever, man. Like, because, like you said, this is the first house. We are so fucking young. Like, I could see you being the type to fucking take this house, flip it, go and keep going and buying houses and building that. Like, I could see you doing that type of stuff. Yeah. I mean, that's the line of work that you kind of do in some aspects too. And that's kind of the skills I think a lot of kids, I wish they taught us more in school, those hands-on skills too. Cause like, well, I wish it was that in hands with like financial stuff. Cause I think a lot of people don't know how to do that type of stuff, like taxes and stuff. They don't teach you that shit unless your school happens to offer a course or a class on that. Most kids don't know that shit when they're coming out of school. Like,
yep. I've been trying to teach my little brother. He's turning 16 this December, and I've been trying to tell him, like, he's helped me the most at the house. Whenever I need it, he gets right up and helps me, which is awesome. Very grateful for that. But I've been trying to teach him, like, hey, try to learn. And he's like, oh, you know, I don't need to learn this. I'm not going to do this. I'm like, listen, one day, even if you don't do construction, which I tell him all the time, don't, you know, go to school, be a doctor, be something else, because construction takes a toll on your body. It's stressful. You're breathing in tons of dust and stuff that just takes away from your life. You know, it's just the truth, you know? So I tell him, but you should still learn, because one day you're going to own a house. And would you rather have to pay somebody double than what it costs to fix it when you could fix it yourself if you knew how to do it? You know? So I told him, like, if you plan on being a homeowner, you should at least know the basics. I'm not saying you should know how to build a house, but know how to fix things, know how to swing a hammer so that you can actually fix things in your own house and you don't have to pay someone double the price of what it costs.
No, that's fucking facts. I mean, I think, what are some of the other skills that you've been teaching him too? Because obviously you have a lot, like a good amount of experience to this point, like not just in construction, but even if there's like life skills that you try to teach him a little bit, is there anything that you kind of like give him advice on?
So, I mean, put me on the spot. Now yeah, it's I'm a, trying
it's,
to think.
It's a tough, it's a tough question. Like, I'll be honest. Like, because I know, not even just like with brothers and stuff, but like even friends and like kids who are younger than me, I try to give them, even with this podcast, I try to give advice and stuff like that, like college and things like that. Things that I've done that I try to tell people, if that opportunity comes for you, like when I went and traveled to Texas, for example, I think a lot of people should take that. If you have an opportunity to leave your hometown and travel, and whether it's work, school, or whatever, do it. Do that shit. It's hard as fuck to leave your family and your friends and everything that you know. But that is where I grew the most. And that was where I really took that next step in my life, and I'm continuing to do that, and I'm building my own, basically my own brand with this podcast, like, and stepping out of my own comfort zone. I mean, I post on TikTok and all that stuff, and I'm very public. Like, I don't hide behind anything, and like, what you get in the podcast is what you get in real life. Like, I'm the same person on this as the same person I am off, and it's that authenticity. That's what I try to preach to these kids, like, try to be you. Like, stop trying to be these people you see on social media. Stop trying to be these people you see on TV. Like, it's half these people are just fucking acting. Like, just be you. No one can copy you at the end of the day. So, like, that's something that, like, I would try to preach to these kids. And, like, even with school, I talked to last week. It's just like, if you don't know, don't fucking go. Like, you're going to waste a ton of money if you don't know what you want to do.
So true.
Like,
so true.
And I recommend things like trades. Like, yeah, it takes a toll on your body. But, like, at least if you do that for a few years, you might figure out, hey, I don't want to fucking do this, and maybe I should go to school. And it's never too late to go to school. That's something I would put out there too as well. And obviously, talking career-wise, construction is not the only thing that you do. So let's kind of dive into that and kind of share the reasons why you got into the military.
Right. So I'm in the Army National Guard, so it's part-time service. You go in once a month for drill, and then you go to AT, which is an annual training that takes anywhere from 2 weeks to a month, maybe even longer, depending on what you're doing. So when I first wanted to join, I was 18 years old, and it was pretty crazy because I was driving so my parents are separated, and I live with my mother, so I was driving to my dad's house, and on the way back home from my dad's to my mom's, right on Route 44 in Rehoboth,
yeah.
It was a rainy day, I'll never forget, it was a rainy day, 9 o'clock at night, and there was traffic on a Saturday. I was like, there's never traffic on 44 in Rehoboth. Like, what's going on? Like completely stopped traffic. I was like, what's going on? So I got out of my car. It was pouring rain. And everyone's sitting in their car because I don't blame them. You know, it's raining. So, but when I come up, there's a woman that was laying in the middle of the road. She just got hit, unconscious, you know. So I walk up to her, and the lady that hit her was, like, hysterical. She was crying. She couldn't control herself. She was next to her car. But she was laying in the middle of the road by herself, you know. So I asked, did anybody call an ambulance? They're like, yep, we called an ambulance already. So I walked up to her. I was 18 at the time. I walked up to her, and I didn't know how to help her, so I just held her hand. You know what I mean? She was completely unconscious. I just felt helpless, you know? So I was holding her hand, and that experience, one, it opened my eyes because I feel like we as a people, as a society, we need to help each other more because everybody's standing in their car. There were people literally just watching, staying in their car, and just left this woman in the middle of the road. She's still alive. So I just held her hand, and that made me realize, like, what if that was a family member? What was that? What if something happened to my mom and I was there and I couldn't help her, or my future daughter or son or something, my wife? So that's what made me want to join, because I wanted to learn, go into the medical field, at least the basics, right? So that I can actually save a life, because I would never be able to forgive myself if something happened where a family member passed out, something happened in my house and I couldn't help them. Mm-hmm. You know, the ambulance usually takes like 10 minutes to show up. In 10 minutes, that's a very long, when it comes to emergency medicine, that's a very long time. So they could pass away by that time, you know?
That's a crazy story. And to the reason why, like, what was it like? Because obviously you still got to go through basic training. What was your basic training like experience like?
Yeah, it was crazy. So nobody in my family joined the military before. Mm-hmm. You know, both my grandparents, my grandfathers were in the Portuguese military. Totally different though. Mm-hmm. So I had nobody to talk to on what I should expect or anything like that, you know? So I went in completely blind, and a lot of people that were going in obviously already have family that's been in and stuff like that, so they knew what to expect. I went in completely blind and just kind of wung it, and I made it, you know. It was tough. Basic training was tough, more mentally than anything else. Mm. Like, they do push you physically, but it's all mental. It's really all mental. They're trying to break you. What they're trying to do is they're trying to break you down and rebuild you to be the man or woman that they want you to be, you know, because you're getting a lot of people from all different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. You know, you're getting people from the ghetto of New York, you know, so they're trying to turn that person from a person who lived on the streets his whole life, you know, to being a soldier, you know, so they're trying to break you down and rebuild you. So it's all mental. They're yelling at you all the time, and that, it's crazy how much that affects you, you know? Most people, I hear it all the time. They're like, oh, well, I couldn't join because, you know, I'd punch that person in the face. Like, no, you wouldn't, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's very intimidating. It's a crazy environment. It really is. But it's mostly mental. It's mostly mental. They do push you physically, but most of it's all mental.
What was, like, the hardest physical task they had you guys do?
Hardest physical? I mean, physically, it really wasn't difficult for me, you know, because I was in shape. I was 18, you know, and I was in shape, so it wasn't very difficult. Like, I passed a PT test the first time and everything else. We ran a lot, but yeah, it did push me. I'm not going to say it didn't. It did push my limits, but it wasn't anything crazy difficult, you know, because they have to keep at a pace also. Mm-hmm. With in the platoon with the weakest link in the platoon. So yeah, they're not pushing everybody to run. They do try to separate it, right? So they, in running, we did it every single morning. They separated in groups. So like A group, they ran the fastest and everything else. But at the same time, you stay together, you know? So they really don't push you too hard physically when you're in shape. I mean, if I was out of shape and I went there, I'm sure it would have been pushing me very hard. But
for the mental aspect, like obviously you're talking about the yelling and stuff, but was it like, did they also make you, I'm assuming they made you guys stay up late and like have less sleep and kind of really break it down that way, huh?
Yeah, so for the majority of it, we got like at least 5 to 6 hours of sleep. There were certain training events that we did that was like a week long where they would purposely make us function on no sleep at all, you know, for days, which is crazy, or like an hour of sleep, which is crazy. And they do that on purpose. So that, when it came to sleep, I was okay with, you know. Mm-hmm. The hardest thing for me was being away from my family, because I was 18. Mm-hmm. I was never away from my family like that before. And it's one thing, like, nowadays, you can be away from your family, but with all this modern communication, you have FaceTime and all this stuff, it's almost like you're not even separated, right? When in basic training, you can only communicate by letters, and they only gave us 3 phone calls throughout the whole time, you know? So I had 1 phone call in the very beginning, and in the very beginning, they tell you what to say. So you can't even say what you want to say. They tell you, you know, call whoever you're calling and tell them that you're here in wherever you are. So I was in Fort Jackson. So I called my mom and they're like, I told her, I was like, hey, I'm in Fort Jackson. I'm safe. Love you. Bye. And that's it. And then basic training started. And then we got a phone call halfway through and at the end, but we just communicated through letters. So that was probably the hardest thing for me because I was always with my family, you know?
Yeah. That's really interesting too, to talk about like that aspect. I mean, it kind of goes back to what I was saying too, a little bit about separating yourself, but that's like to the extreme now, like where the communication, it's like not there at all. So like, I can imagine the anticipation for those letters is probably pretty high. You probably enjoyed writing those letters and like receiving and sending those. It made it worth it. Like, and then when you finally make it through, I can only imagine like the joy it is to see your family and like to make it through basic training. Like, that is an accomplishment to be proud of. I mean, there's many people in this country that could not do it. Like, and that's just a fact.
Yeah, those letters were definitely key for morale, at least my morale. And I have such a supportive family, which I'm so grateful for. I grew up in an all Portuguese family. So I'm super close with my whole family, my uncles, my cousins, like so close with them. They were all writing me, you know. So every single time I got a letter every night, mm-hmm. you know, I was always excited to read it, open it up. You know, that gave me morale. That gave me what I need to get through the day, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And after basic, was there, I know some, whatever training you go for, is there schooling after that too that you had to go to, obviously, to become like a medic and stuff?
Yeah, so you go through basic, which everybody goes through, and that's just you becoming a soldier. And then once you graduate basic, then you go into AIT, which is advanced individualized training, which is now you're getting trained on your MOS, which is your job, your specific job. So I went to Fort Sam Houston, Texas.
Texas. How'd you like Texas?
That was awesome. So Fort Sam is in San Antonio, which is really hot, very hot.
Dude, Texas is a different kind of heat. Like, I lived in Fort Worth, and whew,
yeah,
that shit's hot.
From going to basic to AIT, it was awesome because it gave us more freedoms. Mm. It was more of an educational environment, also still military, you know, so every morning you still had formation and you still marched to chow and everything else. But as the training went on, you got more and more freedom. So we got to go out to the city, to San Antonio on the weekends. And then eventually towards the end, we got to go out after our training at the end of the day throughout the week. You know, so that was some of the best experience I had probably to this day. It was awesome. And the military, you grow so close with the people in the military. It's insane. And in a short amount of time too, because you spend all day, all night, every single day, training, sleeping, everything with these people. Mm. So you get such a close connection with these people. You know, some of my best friends that I have are from the military. You know, I have Jacob Malott. He's from West Virginia. I already went out to West Virginia like 3 times to go see him. You know, so you just meet friends from all over the country.
And it makes sense, too. You guys are going through such, like, not traumatic, but like such a big experience in your life that is very emotionally and physically draining, and it's breaking you down. So you guys are going through this together, so that bond naturally is going to form, and that's so important to have, especially in the military with the people who, in some cases, when people go overseas, that's the people you're fighting next to. So you want to have those bonds with these people, and like, it's good to hear that you made those connections with the people around you and you have good friendships from that. And I think that's awesome to fucking talk about too. And obviously, with this, is there, because I've seen you travel and stuff too with like the service, I'm pretty sure, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
So talk about some of those experiences.
Yeah, so I've traveled everywhere around the world, everywhere except for, I think, 2 continents with or without the military. Yeah. So with the military, the first time I left the country was to Canada. It was a big training event with multiple countries involved in that training event. And then we went to, recently last year, we went to Bulgaria, Greece, Iceland, Romania. That was a huge training event, which is pretty cool. Definitely had some major experiences with that, and I don't even know if I'm allowed to get into details about that mission that I was on, so we won't get into
that. Yeah, we don't have to. But what was probably like your favorite place to visit?
It was kind of crazy. So I was surprised because I always grew up going to Europe. you know, every summer as a kid growing up, I went to Portugal every single summer. So I know how Europe is. And I've been to other countries in Europe before Bulgaria. But when I went to Bulgaria to see how impoverished it was, in Europe too, which I was surprised. I didn't even know that. I thought most countries in Europe weren't like that. Bulgaria was very, very poor. And we were driving through areas, not touristy areas, you know, so we got to see like how the normal people are living, like the farmers out and they're living with no shoes and stuff like that. It was crazy. It was a crazy experience. I didn't think that a European country would be like that. It was almost like we were in a third world country.
Did that change your perspective too a little bit, like on how you view not even just like your own life, but like how others live their lives?
Yeah. So everywhere I've traveled in this country just makes me be more grateful of the U.S. because not one country is like the U.S., you know? Mm. No one's living as luxurious, I'll say, as we are, you know, where we have the best phones, we're wearing the nicest clothes, we have the, you know, the average day person is driving a nice car, where in most of these countries, the average day person doesn't have nearly as much as what the average day person in the U.S. has, you know, so.
And that's so important to talk about, too, because not a lot of people get that experience, and like, that's the, I say it every time on the podcast, it's like sharing people's stories is so important to hear, like, because obviously we're very, it's a very local podcast currently, but like people who've gone to high school with us may have never heard like you after high school. So like, these experiences that you've gone through are like new, and like they've never probably experienced or heard anything like this too. Like they might not have any people in the military in their family. So like, I think it's important to talk about these things, and it's just, to me, it's valuable. Like, obviously we're friends, and obviously I've seen you recently too, so like I have a pretty good idea of what you've gone through for the most part too, but to this depth, like I haven't, and like it's always so cool to hear these things, because like to me, especially going to different countries, that's so valuable. It's just, you don't always hear that from a lot of people too, especially, I mean, we're in this part of New England where a lot of people kind of just really stay where they are, and like it's a very, I'd say, Portuguese people, yeah, that definitely dominate this area. So a lot of people always going to Portugal and stuff. But like, you don't hear people going to Bulgaria or like Romania and things like that. Like, that's so interesting to me.
It is. I mean, we really didn't get to like sightsee, you know. So that's also another way of looking at a country. Like most people, when you travel, you're sightseeing. Mm-hmm. So you're in the touristy areas. You're not seeing the country like how it is actually, you know. So in Bulgaria and Romania, those two countries more so than Greece or Iceland, we didn't see touristy sites, you know, we were seeing how normal people were living, so it was definitely an eye-opener.
How was Iceland? I've always wanted to visit Iceland.
There's nothing over there.
Nothing?
Like, we were in the major city in Iceland for, it wasn't long, you know,
yeah.
But there's, like, nothing out there. It's, like, just, it's honestly boring.
Really? That's actually really surprising to hear that. Wow.
But once again, you know, I'm also seeing it as a way where we weren't sightseeing.
True.
You know, we were there on work. We weren't there on business with the military. So we're not like going and checking out the places everyone always goes to. You know, we were. So it wasn't as exciting to me, at least. I wouldn't pay to go there.
that makes sense to me. And obviously, I'm huge on mental health. In this conversation, I definitely want to direct towards mental health. Before we get there, though, I know shooting and guns are a very big part of your life, and you're actually very good at it. Would you want to like share a little bit about what you've been doing, not only with the military, because I know you've gotten some awards too with that, but like the things that you've done outside too?
Yeah, so I love shooting, and recently one of the big accomplishments that I got that I'm proud of is I won the Governor's 20 competition in Massachusetts. So it's a competition within the military where the best shooters in the state of Mass compete, and then the top 20 of them get awarded the Governor's 20 badge. And so you go to the ceremony, which I won. I got top 20, and then, which was my first time in the competition, which is huge because most people don't make top 20 in the first time they're doing the competition.
Yeah, it's impressive.
So got to meet the Governor of Mass, Charlie Baker. He gave me the badge and everything, a big ceremony. So it was pretty cool. I also like to shoot competition when I can, when I have time. Unfortunately, recently has been like no time, but
yeah.
I shoot a lot of competition. It's a sport, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's really cool to actually point out, because obviously when we talk guns, a lot, there are people that get all scared and nervous about it, and like, I've applied for my license carry in Massachusetts, and shout out to you for writing a letter for me, like that was appreciated. But talking with guns too, I mean, that's obviously part of the military. So was that the first time within the military? Was that like your introduction to guns, or did you already kind of like know how to handle guns beforehand?
Yeah, no, I already knew how to handle guns. So I kind of grew up, my father was into guns. Mm-hmm. So he would take me probably at like around 13. He started taking me to the gun range once in a while, would shoot. He would teach me gun safety, you know what I mean? And the proper way to handle a weapon. And so growing up, I was always around them. You know, my father had an LTC ever since I was little, so he was carrying a gun on him. So it was no big deal to me, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's always, I think that's good to talk about, because I don't think I've ever talked about anything gun related on the podcast. So like, obviously for someone who's in the military, who's very experienced and has awards with shooting as a sport too, I think it's cool to talk about. But switching gears a little bit, I wanted to talk, before we get to mental health and talking about military mental health and just in general, this COVID situation, what have you been kind of doing in your own life to deal with the fact of what's going on?
So once COVID got to the U.S. and it started actually spreading pretty badly, we got activated, the Massachusetts National Guard. They activated pretty much all medical personnel and some extra personnel for logistics, supplies, and stuff. So my whole unit was pretty much activated, and we were going to the nursing homes, and they got hit very bad with the virus for sure. And you know, I'm very glad that I was able to partake in helping these people, because it was sad to see, you know, these people, these facilities. What ended up happening were a lot of elderly at these nursing homes got sick, and then the employees got sick, so they were shorthanded. People weren't going to work because they were calling in sick, so they didn't have enough nurses. So that's why we came in to try to fix that. And it was sad to see, because these people couldn't see the families. You know, some of these people are on the last leg of their life, you know. And I did have a couple patients pass away on me, because that's just how it is in a nursing home, you know, but they couldn't see their family. So it's sad. You know, you see their families like holding signs out the window, cause they couldn't see their parents. It's sad to see.
That's a very intense experience, and like, props to you for being there and going through that. Obviously they're called upon, but like, you have to do it, but like doing that and doing your best to try to be supportive. Was there any point where like you got nervous at all in your own self having to go, especially towards a nursing home and working with people who are infected with COVID?
So at first I was nervous for sure, because we could stay at a hotel if it was more than 50 miles away, or if you had someone in your family that you live with pre-existing medical conditions, which I don't have that in my house. So I was going home after working at these nursing homes, which were COVID rampant. Mm-hmm. So I was nervous, not just for myself, but to give it to my family and everything. We were being very cautious, you know. Every time I came home from work, my mom would open the door. I would take off all my clothes right at the front door, and I would just go straight into the shower, you know, not touch anything. We were being very cautious because the virus is still new. No one knew anything about it. You know, it was a scary thing. So at first I was nervous. After I started working there for so long,
things changed.
Yeah, it was like a month and a half I was activated. So it was like, it just came daily life, you know?
Yeah, I understand that. Especially as the news changes every fucking day with that shit. Like, and at the moment, I've said on the other podcast, they say wear a mask, wash your hands. If they say socially distance, like, please just follow the guidelines as best you possibly can and try to limit the actual spread of this. Even if whatever political side you fall on does not matter, just try to follow this, and we can try to actually get through this as a whole, because it's not just a one person thing.
Yeah, I can attest to that. Your PPE does work. I never caught COVID, and I was working with in a facility that was COVID rampant, and with these patients like very close, you know, I'm helping move these patients and everything else, and I was wearing the proper PPE. I never caught the virus, and a lot of people in the guard that I worked with never caught the virus either. So I can attest that wearing your proper PPE, following what, you know, the CDC is recommending, it does work.
I think that's very important. As someone who's actually worked in that field too and has dealt with it face to face, I think that's super important to acknowledge and say, especially on a podcast and a public platform. So I appreciate you putting that out there. So switching a little bit of gear to mental health, and I mean, we'll kind of play with this COVID stuff. How did that affect your mental health? Like, obviously you mentioned that you were scared at first, but like, were you working long hours? Was it like straining you at all? Like, did you have to work your construction job at all too on top of that? Like, well, how were you dealing with it mentally with this whole COVID situation?
So when I got activated, I just started for the activation for working full time with the guard. So I wasn't working construction at all. You know, I had to take some time away from that. And they were pretty good about the work hours. You know, we had shifts. So this is a nursing home that we were at. We went to all different nursing homes. We would usually spend a week at each. And we had shifts. So everybody had to be, somebody had to be at the nursing home working 24 hours. So I always had the day shift, which was nice for me because I'm used to that, you know, that shift. And we usually worked like 8 hours, you know, and we had a rest day in between. So like we would spend a week at each facility, and then in between each facility, we would have a rest day. So honestly, it was pretty good. They didn't work us too hard. It was, I definitely give CNAs and stuff like that working at a nursing home a lot of credit, because it is a lot of work over there. You know, you're cleaning, you're changing sheets, you're taking vitals, and there's so many things that you have to do in a time frame. You know, like we were doing, as a medic, you know, I could do way more than this, obviously, in my medical field, but we were doing anything we could to help. That's what we were there for. So I was helping feed patients that couldn't feed themselves. I was doing whatever I could to help, and I give them a lot of credit because it's a lot of work. Those CNAs, what they do, and the nurses working in the nursing homes.
That was probably a great experience for you too, though, to go through that and like to have that, like, not just like, obviously you're a medic, so you have pretty hands-on experience as is, but like to really get that experience in a pandemic situation, that's probably very valuable towards your career in general.
Yeah, so it was, because as a combat medic, you know, that was a totally different experience than what I ever was trained for. Mm. You know, we specialize as medics, we're versatile as our job. So we kind of can work in a hospital environment. We can work out on the battlefield, but we're more so trauma specialists. You know, that's what we specialize in, is trauma. We specialize in gunshot wounds and amputations and all that stuff that involves trauma. So now, my pretty much whole training was mostly involved with trauma. So to go from that, battlefield trauma as well, which is even worse. So battlefield trauma, to go to a nursing home was a big change for me, you know. So I was learning on the fly how they're doing things and, you know, so how to move patients, because on the battlefield, we move patients way differently than you move an elderly patient.
So. Definitely. Like, again, big shout out to you for doing that. That's like a lot of credit, and like it's essential work, and like you really stepped up in that aspect and taught yourself probably a lot about yourself and too by doing that experience. But obviously we're talking a little bit mental health, and I've mentioned on other podcasts too that I'm about, I think it's 2 months now, I've gone put myself into therapy and just like dealing with my own mental stuff, really addressing the things that I've dealt with in the past and like understanding why I feel the way I feel. And I mean, I say it on every podcast, and it's my motto, feel your feelings. I'll say that on every fucking podcast, so get used to it. I'm probably going to make a shirt eventually one day with that saying on it. But obviously, I've talked with my own brother about this in the military. Like, mental health is not always talked about, and I think more lately it's been kind of brought up. But were you ever taught anything about mental health, whether it's basic or any of your schooling or anything recently that they've talked about?
So I've been in for 6 years, and the whole time I've been in, they take it very seriously with the military, you know, because obviously in the past they've had huge problems with that.
Yeah.
So there's an enormous amount of assets that the military provides, resources that the military provides for us when we need to reach out, you know. I haven't used any of those resources, but I know people who have, and they say it's amazing. You know, you have access to free therapy and anything you need when it comes to that.
That's actually really great to hear, because, like, obviously you do hear those stories where it doesn't go that way, and especially more in the past, I think as a whole in society, mental health has become more of a front-running topic, and it's good. We're kind of getting rid of that stigma, and I think that's very important for the conversations that I try to have and being more open about it. I mean, a lot of people out there, especially men, can't really have a conversation like this, talking about life, talking about mental health, everything that we've gone through. It's hard to have these conversations, but it's needed, though, because you don't understand people's perspectives until you actually listened to them and people spoke up on them. So like for me, at first I was scared to talk on a podcast that, hey, I'm in therapy, because like there is such a stigma to that. Like, I mean, I mentioned before, some of the first things that people asked were, what's wrong? Or give me an example why you want to go to therapy. Like, to me, that's the wrong fucking approach. Like, and that's not them. That's not their fault for asking that question. They've never been taught how to deal with that, or taught how to deal with someone who's dealing with that type of stuff. So I think it's important for people, like, not even myself, but anyone out there, whether it's social media, TV, whatever, or newspaper article, whatever the fuck you're into, talking about mental health and putting out that message that it's okay to ask for help. You're not weak. You're not, like, less of a man for saying that you need help. Because it takes more of a man to admit, hey, that I do need help and I want to go get help, than one to just, like, sit and be quiet and bottle your shit. Because I think we're almost raised, I think, in society to bottle that stuff. We're not taught, hey, be, you know, and you don't got to be like me. I am very emotional. I wear my shit on my sleeve. Like, I will show you my emotions 24/7. I mean, it's just kind of who I am, and I embrace that, and I love that about me. But I think more people need to be more expressive, because we're so taught to bottle things up and be so tight and stressed, and that's just the stereotypical male, and that's the way we're brought up. And to be that tough guy, you can't cry, all that bullshit. I'm not about that. Like, I want people to cry, because you're letting out. Crying's an expression, and releasing that tension, that emotion, that sadness. And instead of holding it in, you're letting it out. So I think it's really important, just for at least me to bring it out there, and I appreciate you talking about that. Was there ever a point, too, obviously you're a medic, so you're dealing with people, not only probably physical stuff, but is there ever a point where you had to deal with any patients that had some mental aspects to it?
Yeah, and we are trained on that, how to treat that briefly.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part, we kind of refer him to a behavioral health specialist in the military, you know, so that's not really our expertise, you know, and everybody copes with things differently. Like, I know a lot of guys in the military, how we cope with mental trauma is dark humor, you know, and people shun upon that, you know, they frown that, but that's like kind of how we cope with things, you know, and I've definitely seen some shit. I saw some shit in Bulgaria. And I definitely seen some shit as a medic, and, you know, having my buddies there with me to help me cope through that, you know, and we're always just joking around. And to me, that helped me, you know, to make light of a situation that was obviously very, very grim, but to make me laugh and try to not think about it, you know, and that's kind of how I coped with my things.
Yeah, and I've actually posted stuff about that too, of everyone's coping mechanisms are different. But as long as you're acknowledging what you've gone through to an extent and not letting it eat you up and hurt you and debilitate you from what you need to accomplish in life, that's the most valuable part. And where I would almost not suggest, but if you ever need to, I've looked into things like journaling, meditating. I don't know if you meditate at all, but I think meditating is fantastic. And it's like, it's hard to do, because like to just sit there and just be at still and calm with yourself. And like how I've taught myself how to meditate was basically allow things to kind of flow like a wave. So obviously your stillness with the breath, you're breathing in and out and you're trying not to think, but that's hard because thoughts just bounce in and bounce out. So my process was I either create a mantra. Sometimes I'm like, I don't know, like in with nature, out by the creek. Like, I picture myself in New Hampshire by this creek, and, like, I just picture myself in that moment, and I just think about that. But if I have a thought that comes in, like, oh, I have a deadline with work that I have to do by Friday, I let that thought come in, and then I let it go. And then I stay in the moment. And, like, I think meditating is an awesome practice, and if you've never tried it, I definitely would recommend it to anyone.
Yeah, I definitely got to try, because, unfortunately, I am the type of person to just bottle things up, you know, I hold it in, you know, I can't even remember the last time I cried, honest to God, you know, and obviously that's not good. It causes, like, just between me and my fiance, like we have arguments, and I think I'm to blame for that, because that's how I always live my life, is I bottle everything up. And, you know, just recently, one thing that ended up kind of blowing up on me was I was driving up to Vermont 2-3 weeks ago. We were doing a job in Rutland. It's like 4 hours away. On the way up, on the highway. It was a 2-lane highway, but everyone's flying like 60. So on the way up, I was climbing up this hill, and right on the top of the hill, I see a tractor trailer truck in the woods, and I see a car. It was so smashed up, I could not even recognize what kind of car it was. I think it was like a Ford Focus.
Damn.
So, and obviously, I've seen a lot of accidents. I always stop to help, and I've stopped to help in a lot of accidents. But most of the time when you get there, it's already been there for like 30 minutes. Ambulance is already there, you know, or ambulance is very close. So I saw one guy in the middle of the road. So I slow down. I'm like, hey, is everything okay? He's like, oh, I think that guy's dead. And he pointed at the car in the woods. I was like, shit. So now I know that he was a tractor trailer truck driver, and he was fine because he's driving a big rig. So I go grab my medic bag in the truck, come out, and when I'm going up to the driver's side door, this is crazy, I'm gonna forget this, the airbags were all deployed, so I could only see like maybe 6 inches from the top of the window, I mean from the bottom of the window up, because the airbag was deployed. And I just see, you know, he has one arm broken, clearly broken as an open fracture, and his other arm was holding the steering wheel. So I was like, hey, are you okay? I can't see his face. So I asked him, I was like, hey, are you all right? And he's like, I'm fine. You know, and I laugh about that now because he was not fine. But at the time, I was not laughing. So in my head, I was like, okay, this guy's not okay. He's obviously still in shock. This yeah. literally, I didn't see it happen, but it must have just happened right when I, and things happen for a reason. So I went around the car. I couldn't open up the driver's side door because it was so messed up. I opened up the passenger side door, thank God, because if I couldn't get in the car, I don't even know how I would be able to help him other than smashing a window. And he had a lot of bad injuries. You know, he had a huge, I think he had a fractured skull. I wasn't going to palpate that to see because yeah. he could cause a lot of damage, but he was bleeding a lot. So I controlled the bleeding, put a tourniquet on his arm because he had arterial bleeding on his arm. So, and what another thing that was crazy too, so I stopped the bleeding. He was still conscious and verbal, which is great. That's an amazing thing. He was still in shock. The car was smoking, so I had to get him out of the car because mm-hmm. that car could turn on fire at any moment, and plus I don't want to breathe that shit in. So I have to try to figure out, now that the bleeding's controlled, how to get him out of the vehicle. Normally you don't want to get him out of the vehicle unless it's life-threatening, which that potentially could be if the car catches on fire, and plus he's breathing in that smoke, which could be life-threatening as well. So, and I'm not a big guy, you know, so yeah. to try to pull this guy out in a vehicle that's completely smashed is difficult. I didn't do it by myself, thankfully. Finally, somebody, like a bunch of cars kept driving by, nobody stopped to help, which is crazy, you know. That reminds me of the time, of the reason why I wanted to join the military. Like, no one got out to help. It's like how our society is, and you know, I get it, like nobody wants to do that, and then they could potentially get sued and stuff like that, and maybe some people can't see that, and I get it, but like at that moment I needed help getting him out of the vehicle. Luckily some guy pulled over and he's like, hey, you need help? I was like, yeah. So he helped me pull him out of the vehicle, and the ambulance didn't show up for like 20 minutes because we were in the middle of nowhere in Vermont. So things happen for a reason. The reason why I said that earlier was because if I wasn't there, he would 100% would have been dead. He would have bled out. The ambulance took 20 minutes to show up, and on top of it, nobody stopped to pull over to help the guy, you know. And just the night after that, I had a dream, and I only told my fiance this. I haven't told anybody else, but I had a dream, which is crazy. Some crazy symbolism in this dream. Where it was a car accident, right? So in this dream, I get out of the car, go up to the car, and I see myself in the vehicle, right? What? But the vehicle's trapped, and I can see that my arms are broken and everything, like really, really bad. I'm not trying to give people vivid pictures. So I see myself, and I'm looking into my own eyes trying to get into the vehicle, but I couldn't. So I couldn't save myself. It was a fucked up dream. Like I had some serious symbolism. I don't know what it means. Like, I couldn't save myself, and it really bothered me. Like, I woke up in the middle of the night. My fiance woke up. She's like, you okay? I was like, woke up in the middle of the night. It was crazy, you know?
That is fucking crazy. That situation, too, though. Like, if you literally weren't there, he's probably not alive. Like,
I don't know if he lived, you know? I tried looking up information. Couldn't find anything, so it wasn't on the news or anything, but... I do know that he was alive when he loaded up on the ambulance. So I know I did my part. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's all you really can do, too, in a situation like that. I mean, it's crazy that like no one stops. Like, I mean, you talk about that. Like, it's a society thing. Like, whether people are afraid that they're going to get sued, they're afraid that maybe that someone's going to hurt them, they're going to get in trouble, like, they're in a rush, whatever the fucking...
Or some people just don't care.
Yeah, you know? And that's, I mean, it's a big problem. I mean, going back to just, like, mental health and stuff, I mean, that's a big problem just in our country. People just literally don't care and are emotionless. They don't care about anyone or but themselves. And they're selfish. And, like, what we got fucked up in this society is the idea of self-love and being selfish. Because you should love yourself selfishly, but don't be selfish enough to, like, not help other people, especially people who are in need. Because loving yourself is also putting out that love for other people. Because you love yourself so much that you want to help others, too. And, like, somewhere in our society, we've got this all fucking backwards. That you have to be so just, like, inwards with your shit. And you have to be so by yourself. I don't need nobody. Fuck everyone else. I'm going to do whatever I want to do, and that's how I'm going to live my life. And, like, I mean, I used to be like that. I used to be mad selfish, and I used to not care what anybody thought, and I'd do whatever I wanted. But, like, I grew up. Honestly, like, I want to help other people. I want to do things to make people's lives easier and better. And, I mean, that's what you're doing, too. And, like, in that situation, you're literally helping someone possibly save their life. I mean, we don't know the extent of what happened after the fact, but you did your part. And, like you said, everything happens for a reason. And I'm a firm believer. I said it last week in last episode with Juliana, and she said it, too. And, like, I literally, honestly, it's weird you said that, because that was one of the quotes I picked for her that I posted today, was everything happens for a reason. And, like, we might not know that reason right now, but eventually we will know that reason. And it's important to say that. But we are wrapping up, coming towards the end of this podcast. And I end this podcast the same question, and it's tied to passions. But if there's anything else that you wanted to talk about, we do have some time that you could say whatever you need to say.
Whatever you want to talk about.
You know? Okay. Well, if you have nothing further to add, I'd like to ask this question. So I ask this question to everyone at the end of every podcast. What would your advice be to someone who's pursuing their passion?
Go for it. You know, when I first joined the military, when I was going to join the military, I didn't ask my parents' permission. I didn't ask what they thought about it. Literally, at dinner, we always do grace before we eat. And then we go around the table and say what we're grateful for. And I said, oh, I'm grateful that I just enlisted. You know what I mean? So that's how I joined the military. So just go for it. You know, and you can gain so much experience from it, which I have. I've already been in for 6 years. Like, I gained so much experience from the military, traveling the world, everything, and met great people, met great connections, made great connections, and gained great skills. Like, just go for it.
Dude, fantastic. I love that. Was well fucking said. And, like, I appreciate the fuck out of you for coming on the podcast and being vulnerable. And you reached out to me to be on the podcast, which I appreciate more than anything. Like, you really don't know. And anyone else who ever wants to come on the podcast, reach out. Like, what Brent did, like, that's amazing. Like, you wanted to come on, and that means the fucking world to me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This has been great, dude. So I'll kind of give my little wrap up now. And again, thank you. And I'll share Brent's information too when I make all my posts. So if you ever want to get in contact with me or Brent, if you have any questions about construction, his, like, family life or whatever, like, especially military, I mean, I can connect you with him and we could talk and all that fun stuff. But again, if you like the podcast, please rate, review, share it with your friends, share it with your family. It's always greatly appreciated by me and my guest. And if you want to check it out, thecarolconnection.simplecast.com. Also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or all the major listening platforms. But until next time, guys, bye.